Pastor Joe.
And I'm Kirsten.
We've served in church leadership for over two decades.
And most of that, we've been on staff together.
We're here to talk about our faith, family, and ministry.
Welcome to Under the Hood.
Well, we need to follow up on something from last week. We took a poll, and thank you for everybody who participated in this poll.
It was on Instagram. If you're not on Instagram, then you lost out.
So, Abby.
And apparently, my people need to get on Instagram.
Will you remind everybody what this was about?
This was about the right way to eat a Chick-fil-A chicken biscuit.
That's right. And Kirsten's way was pull the bread apart, eat the chicken, put some jelly on the bread, eat it separate. And the poll...
It's a deconstructed
The poll said biscuit. that, according to our poll, mm-hmm. most people thought that was insane.
I think Abby used right. the word overwhelmingly.
Yeah. So Abby, what was the result of the poll?
75% of people eat it like a sandwich.
You guys are
And only
all...
25% deconstructed.
Come on, people. Like, seriously, it's not even a sandwich. It's a chicken biscuit.
But why would they take the time to put that chicken between those two halves of the biscuit if they wanted you to take it apart?
It's the savory and sweet. Like, you have the savory chicken, and then you have the sweet jelly on your biscuit.
Sure, but then they would wrap the chicken, or they do a little container where the chicken would be on one side and the biscuit would be on another with a little jelly packet.
Abby, you can argue with me.
Now, can I've had...
I'm not going to change
I voted
mind.
Against
I know,
you.
I know. I saw. Thank you for the support.
Well, I had to go back and think through my history with Chick-fil-A chicken biscuit. I had to... this whole conversation, because I...
Can I stop you? Can I interrupt? I'm sure everyone listening right now is rolling their eyes going, are we really talking about chicken biscuits again?
Well, this caused me to think more than I thought I would about it, but I actually deconstruct mine as well. I take the chicken apart, and what I do is I pull the chicken out and I dip it in Chick-fil-A sauce. Then I put grape jelly on the bread. I do the same thing, but I got to thinking, I didn't always do that. When did I start doing that? And so here's
the influencer in your life.
No, I had to go back and think through the steps. I started doing that several years ago, back when Chick-fil-A used to have sausage gravy. Now, here's the thing.
They did not have
Chick-fil-A.
No, they did not have sausage gravy. They had chicken gravy.
Or chicken gravy, whatever it was. No, I thought it was sausage gravy.
I'm just...
Okay, but here's my point.
Let's get the facts right.
Here's my point. Chick-fil-A needs to bring back their gravy. Because what I used to do is I used to get the chicken sandwich, mm-hmm. and then I would take the chicken out and eat it separate.
You mean the chicken biscuit.
The chicken biscuit. Yeah, the chicken biscuit. The breakfast chicken biscuit.
Yeah.
I would take the chicken out because I would order a side of gravy for 60 cents. And then I would break the bread apart and I would dip it in the...
How do you remember it was 60 cents?
I remember these things. And I would dip the biscuit in the gravy, and all of a sudden it was like having two meals. I had a piece of chicken, and then I had biscuits and gravy, and it was amazing.
It was their chicken gravy was amazing, and there are a lot of people very upset.
And
about
I just
this.
I realized this through this conversation that after the gravy went away, they stopped selling it. I still took my sandwich apart and I replaced it with grape jelly. The thought never hit me to just eat it like a sandwich again. I was so used to breaking it apart.
I've never seen you eat it as a sandwich.
Well, it's been years. Or could it also be that when you break it apart, it makes your breakfast feel like it goes longer, like it's spreading the food out? I really don't know. But so thank you all for participating in our highly data-driven poll.
Now let's get on to something more important.
All right. Let's move on. I finished the Hope in a Future series on Sunday.
Well, congratulations.
Felt really good to be done with that one.
It was a good one.
I loved it, actually.
It created action. I liked that. I like that people are like, hey, I want to do something now. All from a vision, mission, values series.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that a mission, vision, values series would.
I will say our attendance kind of dropped, though.
No, it didn't.
This last Sunday.
No,
they knew you were preaching on generosity. They were like, hey, it was daylight savings and we lost an hour and our pastor's preaching on generosity. We are out of here.
Well, compared to the prior couple of weeks where attendance was up pretty good, it had kind of fallen off just a little bit. But I joked, well, it's because they knew I was talking about generosity. They thought I was talking about preaching money. But
But you did see it, a great job, and people have been moved to action. People who been in the office this week talking to Linda and us, stories. It's just been really cool.
Yeah, I've really appreciated the feedback, especially when we went through these five values. You know, you're talking about Jesus, and really you make them very simple. How is Jesus generous? And that's the model we follow.
Yeah.
How is Jesus compassionate? And that's the model we follow. Mm-hmm. How is Jesus prayerful? And we follow that model.
Yeah.
And I come back to the whole thing. Whenever you preach Jesus, I mean, wherever, anywhere in the world, Jesus is preached, mm-hmm. lives change. And so I was really pleased with the response and the energy that came from that series, if I could use that word.
Yeah.
So we were talking about vision, mission, values. And a lot of times people don't think that that's very exciting.
Yeah, I would usually call it a snooze fest.
Well,
you can make any series good. Like, I think you're one of those guys that if you were to like give, someone were to give you like a secret topic, like if we were to hand you an envelope today, you would open it up and it would say like pickles, and you could talk 30 minutes about pickles.
I don't know
couldn't
about
he,
that.
Abby? Couldn't he?
Oh, definitely.
I'm definitely. Serious. We should actually try that. We should like put a topic, a weird, they have like games, like board games like that. Put a weird topic in a card and have you open it and see how you and just give you the microphone.
Just talk about it or preach about it?
Either. I think sometimes in here you do preach.
Do you remember, we haven't done this in years, but we used to do a question series. Do you remember when I've done several of these where we would just like a month ahead of time, we would just put out cards or whatever, or a mechanism.
You had time to prepare for that.
Yeah. And we just ask your question and I would build a whole sermon series around people's questions. And, do you remember from the last couple of times we've done that? I don't even remember the last time we did. I'm sure it's still on.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Q&A series is on the website somewhere.
There's a question series and a Q&A series we did.
Yeah, I can't. And we did these in Kansas City as well.
But you had time to prepare. There are some pastors who will be like, hey, you know, sending me your topics or text as we go and I'll preach on as we go, which that's a little crazy.
Right, but I remember from the last couple of times we've done it, the number one category of questions, so I just take a bunch of questions, lump them in under one heading, was all about sexuality and gender and homosexuality.
And you haven't talked a lot about that necessarily in any of your series. I know that there was one planned that you never got to. So even our boys have asked you, Dad, when are you going to preach that series? I think you should go for it.
Yeah, that series was going to be called, I was slated to do it.
COVID.
And then COVID hit. And
March of 2020.
And we had the graphics and everything done. Yeah. I was working on the series, preparing for it. But the series was called, drum roll please, The Elephant in the Room. And
I don't know why we needed a drum roll.
But what
for
I remember
that.
Is the graphic itself was the word sex. In the shape of an elephant.
Yeah.
So the elephant in the room was the subject of sex and sexuality. And I was preparing to do a whole series on that. Then COVID hit.
I think you felt like you addressed it in a different series, but
I did.
I think you should probably, because of our culture, like head on. Like, I think it's something I don't think you can, I don't think you can address it enough. And so I think it's a series that people would appreciate, it, young and old, whether they want to hear it or not. It's probably a series that they need to hear, and it needs to be tackled. But
well, clearly, when COVID hit and we were no longer meeting in person, that was not the series I wanted to do.
I'm
as
not
the
doing that online.
The first week after COVID, we were supposed to start this series. Hey, we're going to be online only, and I'm going to be teaching. It was just, and we didn't even know exactly how to proceed at that point, let alone tackle a subject like that over the internet.
Families were worshiping together at that point, and it was just not a series to do over YouTube or something. But all that to say, you can make vision, mission, values series come to life, put people into action, transformation, lives changed, hearts changed, movement. And that's what I'm saying. Like, you have a gift.
Well, thank you. That sounded like a really nice compliment.
It was.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Maybe I'll take you out for coffee later.
I doubt it.
What are you doing later?
You don't like coffee.
Well, we finished the series with Christ-like generosity. And I thought, Kirsten and I were talking earlier that this might be a good opportunity for us to tell all of you that we were the recipients of one of the most generous things ever. When we were the recipients of what I would call Christ-like generosity. And it's probably too long of a story for me to tell on a Sunday morning, but it's not too long of a story for us to tell here. And so I thought we would take a minute here and we would just tell you about Christ-like generosity that really quite literally landed right in our lap, unexpected, and has had ongoing blessing for many years.
So the story kind of starts like this, and I know Joe's going to interrupt because
I have to fix all the details.
I am not a storyteller like Joe, but we had a pastor friend of ours approach us in Kansas City one night and say, "Hey, I got a friend. He's been trying to get hold of you guys, and you need to give him a call back."
Well, you already missed a detail, but that's okay. You got the gist of it.
Oh my goodness.
My friend said, "Call this number. You're going to want to call this number."
And
with no context at all. And when somebody hands me a phone number, even a friend says, "You need to call this number," trust me, I'm probably not going to call it.
It's a weird ask.
It is weird. I'm not going to call some. Is he playing a joke on me? He gave me no context. And then a week or
it's
two.
It's like you don't trust your friend, your pastor friend.
A week or two went by.
And he's like, "Dude, you need to call."
And we were at an event together, and he hunts me down at this event, and he goes, "Hey, you never called that number," which is kind of weird. It's like, how do you know that? And he said, "Trust me, just trust me. You need to call this number."
So you called.
So I called and
they set up dinner plans for us to meet them.
Yeah, the person on the other end said, "Hey, we've been expecting your call." And the guy said, "My wife and I would like to take you and Kirsten out for dinner." And we do not know who these people are. But I trust my friend.
So that was an interesting invite. We ended up at Cheeseburger in Paradise.
Oh, yes.
In Kansas City, Kansas, which was on the other side of Kansas City because we were in the
out by the
City,
Legends.
Missouri.
I don't know if that restaurant's there anymore.
It's not. It's
Cheeseburger in Paradise. Yeah. That was one of my favorite places when we lived in Kansas City.
So we go in there and I don't even think we knew who we were looking for.
No, they kind of waved us over to their table.
We're like, okay, I guess we're supposed to sit with that couple.
Very nice couple. A little bit older than we were. And they just said, "Well, nice to meet you." And we sat down and made small talk for 2 or 3 minutes. And they finally said, "Well, you're probably wondering why complete strangers wanted to ask you out for dinner or lunch." And I'm like, "Well, yeah, I have no context." And he said to Kirsten and I, "My wife and I would like to take you and your wife on vacation." And my first thought was, "Excuse me? On vacation?" It kind of blew me away. I'm like, what's going on here? What, like, who just takes somebody on vacation?
So it was fun because then they started to explain to us that they have a ministry that they really felt called to bless pastors and their wives, and it's something that they know that R&R doesn't happen and vacations sometimes get pushed aside. And so they said, "You know, we have been doing this for many years, mm-hmm. and we have a team of people that pray, and your name came up. And we've been praying about this."
They had been praying for us for several years, actually.
We know it's for certain that it's you guys, and we've already booked the trip. And we're like, what?
And they said, "We sure hope these dates work out for you.
Because we're taking you on a cruise."
So yeah, they took us on a cruise and they gave us the dates and they said, "We're going to accompany you and you're welcome to hang out with us, or you don't even have to see us the whole time, but we're going to go with you. We're going to pay for everything." And I'm like, this can't be real, is it? And they're like, "No, we've been praying for you, and the Lord put you on our hearts." And like Kirsten was saying, we have a team of prayer warriors in our city that all they do is they pray for pastors, and then we feel like whoever God puts on our hearts, that's who we need to take on. They need some vacation. They need to be on a trip with us.
They need rest.
And you're it.
So they're like, "We know you have little kids, so could you secure some childcare during that week?" And we left that restaurant with our mouths on the ground. Like, we were like, "What just happened? Is this for real?" Like, They were trustworthy, kind people. We were not. And they were that way.
They were members at my friend's church. Yeah. That's how he knew them, and he knew all about this ministry, and that's why he was so persistent. You really need to call them, and so not to drag this story out because there's lots of really neat details. But next thing we know, we got on a plane and we flew to Puerto Rico. They paid for the flights and everything. We stayed in a nice hotel that night. The next day, we got on a cruise ship. And for the next 7 days, they said, we're going to do excursions at all the stops. We got everything. We don't even want you to pay for a tip for the taxi driver, nothing. And so the whole week, they just were generous with us. We went on excursions. So last week, if you listen to last week's podcast, I talked about that perfect day, and I think there was a picture on Instagram and of me swimming off the coast of Barbados. That was that trip.
It was really an amazing week,
and we got to know them pretty well on that cruise, and we ended up spending a lot of time together with them. And what I remember is, I do believe that God works in timing, and I do believe that God impresses upon people through prayer and other ways, his will. And I have no doubt that he had impressed our name on their minds. Mm-hmm. But I remember we were snorkeling, and I forget which island we were snorkeling off of, but the guy that took us, we were kind of, you and his wife were off one way, and we were just kind of just bobbing in this crystal blue water, just having the time of our lives. And we were just talking, you know, just chilling in the ocean. And I told him, I said, you know, this trip could not have come at a better time for us. And he goes, tell me about it. Why? And I said, well, something I haven't really shared with you guys is that we're just in a really, really tough season, you know. And this is something that Kirsten and I were wrestling with privately. There was a whole year out of my 10 in Kansas City. And it's not a thing that we've talked about a whole lot, but I wanted to quit so bad. I was so over everything. We were in a really hard situation. I was having all those thoughts at the time. It's not worth it. I'm like, I should just get out of ministry completely. And I remember during that season, breaking down with my father. You know, I'll try to get emotional thinking about it. You know, where I sat in the driveway and I was on the phone with my dad. I was done. And I told him I'm going to quit ministry. I'm really thinking about it. And I was talking to him with, just other career choices, you know, that I can make. Because I was just, at the time, just put up with the pettiness, the mentality, the always the feeling of pushing a rock up a hill, you know, and not no relief at all. And I was just done. And I'd actually put my resume out to some other churches, you know, and was like, there's greener grass out there. I just got to go find it. But nothing was happening. Like nothing. And I was just, then I quit. I'm not putting up with this nonsense. And at that particular time, now let me preface this. My overall ministry in Kansas City was very positive. Mm-hmm. The 10 and a half years I spent there, overall, when I look back, I've got more positive memories than negative ones. But there was a year-long season where nothing seemed to be going right. No relationship seemed to be going well. I was having adverse, like just with other people in the church. It's hard for me. It would take me too long to unpack what it was. Just too much. But I'd reached my breaking point. I was like, I'm done. I was sitting in the driveway with my dad. And I was like, I think I'm going to quit the ministry altogether. I'm going to go do something else with my life. None of this is worth it. And he really kind of talked me back off the ledge and was like, and what I remember asking him, I said, Dad, I said, would you still be proud of me if I wasn't in the ministry? And man, whew, I didn't mean for this to get emotional. I think this is my first time to get emotional on the podcast. But I said, would you still be proud of me if I left the ministry? And I'll never forget his words. He goes, "Of course I'll be proud of you. I'm not proud of you because you're in the ministry." And then he said, "But you're not quitting the ministry." But you're not quitting. And you're just in a hard season. So after my breakdown out in the car that day in the driveway, went inside. And this story that I'm telling you happened around the same season. Okay. So that's where that's kind of the setup. It's like, so we're just bobbing out there in the water, you know? Maybe we should take five. So we're just out there in the water, and the what I just described to you is how I was feeling the day I got on that boat. I'm just done. And in fact, my plan was to come back from that cruise and quit and turn in my resignation. That's where I was, because I'd had enough. And so we're bobbing out there in the water, and I just said, I told the guy, "You don't know how much we needed this, how much I just needed to get out of Kansas City, and I just needed a break." And I began to tell him about some of the struggles. This guy that I didn't know very well, but just we're on the receiving end of this massive amount of generosity, and this undeserved generosity just. And so I'm just pouring my heart out to him out in the ocean. Evidently, the ocean snorkeling is a great time to pour your heart out to somebody. We're supposed to have our head in the water looking at fish. And I'm just pouring my heart out. And he says, "Well, that must be the reason then." Mm-hmm. And I said, "What do you mean that must be the reason?" He goes, "We were actually going to invite you to go on a cruise a year ago." And he goes, "We've been praying for you and your wife by name for a couple of years. But right before we invited you, we just got somebody else came on our radar, like a different pastor. God just put a different pastor on our mind. And so we had a conscious decision. It's not Joe and Kirsten's time yet." And so that was a year earlier. And a year earlier, I think I was happy as a bug. Happy as a button, or whatever the phrase is. Happy as a bug, happy as a button. And then after that, a year earlier, they took another pastor's wife on a cruise, and they began praying again. And then they felt like more burdened than ever that was our turn this time. So that's why they reached out. And I just said, I told him what was going on. He goes, "That's got to be the reason. That's got to be the reason why God's the Lord timing. Delayed your trip a year." Mm-hmm. Because you needed to get away. So, and I remember during that cruise, I purchased a little internet package so I could check my email, because I'd had my resume out and I didn't want to be out of touch. And I had already planned on quitting when I got back. I mean, that was really, I don't know if I had said I'm quitting, but Kirsten could tell you, I really think this is going to come back and be done. But we spent 7 days out there. That's why I think that day out in Barbados was so special, because my mind was completely off of it. So we got back from the cruise, and I've thought a lot about that over the years, of just how much that generosity, the generosity of Christians, giving of their own resources to care for us, to love on us. And we are like
to pray for us.
And we are to pray for us. We are like complete strangers to them. Mm-hmm. But
they did not know us before that trip.
No, they didn't know us, but they just lavished unsolicited, undeserving generosity our way, just because they had a big heart for pastors. They wanted to care and love on pastors. And so we had a week of reprieve. And then if you want to know the rest of the story, because I guess I'm pretty good at not finishing stories sometimes, but it was very shortly after that, everything turned around. Yeah. God just turned, not anything I did, it's one of those times where I'm saying God just orchestrated details, moved some parts around, and all. It was almost overnight. The ministry just got way better.
And I will say, because I'm such a great storyteller, can't you tell? That's why I just stayed silent over here. Let Joe take that. But it was after that, though, like you said, things got really healthy for us there. And when we left there to come here, we were happy.
That's right.
We weren't looking to leave. And that's what shocked us so much. You know, I think for most people who don't understand full-time ministry, that I think some pastors probably do leave disgruntled or frustrated, but we were in a very healthy season and happy and had friends and our boys were happy. So we were not looking to leave, but we did have so many good years of ministry there, but
yeah.
So that is our story of generosity from this family. And
that's right.
It is, like I said, Joe's got all these great story and details that I'm just not good at. And I appreciate your story about your dad too. I forgot about that story and it made me tear up.
Well, you know, and that's, I think the bigger point too of this story is when you are Christ-like in your generosity and you are generous with your time and you're generous with your resources and you're generous in that way, you never know how much life change can happen, how much ministry and compassion care can happen just on the other end. And I'm not saying you got to go take people out on cruises. What I'm saying is when you sit with that person and you just listen to their story, and you carve out the time in your schedule and you're okay with it interrupting your day and you just help out that person, or you're generous in the situation. It doesn't have to be a cruise. It could just be little things. You just don't know what's on the receiving end of that generosity and how that will minister that.
Well, and that's why I love this story, is because this couple had no idea what was going on behind the scenes of everything. And when you put everything together, there's more details about what God was doing through all of this.
Oh, yeah.
That when we came back from the cruise and all that, there's a lot more details to this. But for the sake of this story, this was our story of being recipients of someone else's generosity and how beautiful it was.
Yeah. Well, like I said, that was a couple years before we actually left. And what you were referring to is right after that, with all these circumstances that changed, it ushered in the two best years we had in Kansas City. So our final 2 years was the best out of the whole 10. Mm-hmm. And so it was a reminder to me that sometimes it is always darkest before, you know, before the sun, you know, what's the phrase I'm thinking of? You know, it's always, no, obviously the wrong phrase, quiet before the storm, but it, but you know, it's always darkest before the light comes out.
Darkest
but,
before the dawn, right?
Darkest before the dawn. And so I would say that was probably the darkest season I had in ministry where I was just hands up, ready to give up. Mm-hmm. But that was that darkest, that was right before the dawn. Everything changed. So the next 2 years were incredible, so incredible, I didn't want to leave. And so when God actually called me away, literally, when I tried to get out on my own terms, God didn't let me. But then when I didn't want to get out, God called me out. And that's what brought me to Bella Vista. Now, I will say this, just so any of our listeners know, I have never been back in that dark space again. I've never been back. I've never had a season like that before. And I want to say this, I don't want to be misunderstood, but I just want to bring some clarity. Every year I've had at New Life was better than any year I ever had in Kansas City. Now, that's not overreaching, and it's not criticism of that previous ministry, but the night and day difference of where I'm at today and where I was then, I can say that every year I've had in Bella Vista was better than my best year in Kansas City. Do you agree with that, Kirsten? I don't know if you're kind of looking at me like you're not sure you agree with that.
Well, I do. I know that we have some listeners that are from that congregation still, and we still love and care about them. But
no, it's not a criticism that time. I'm just saying what God.
So I don't
God,
want them to misinterpret it either. But what God's doing in our lives and in the ministry here is, we just know this is where we belong.
That's right. I think my bigger point is, had I gotten out when I wanted out, I don't think I would be on the blessing side today. Mm-hmm. Like if I would have gotten out a couple years early, I know that I would have never ended up in Bella Vista. Now, who knows where I'd have ended up, and God, I think, would have blessed it. But the blessings that have come from moving our family to Arkansas and being a part of this church are so far beyond anything that I thought I would experience in my ministry career. That's why I say every year and what happened each year seems better than what my time was in Kansas City. And I think it's just in God's blessing. But that generosity, that of moment we're talking about, I think it sustained me long enough to get through what I need to get through. So your generosity, when you're generous like Jesus was, it absolutely changes lives. And that's one moment where I think my life. And so when I said that was a snapshot of a perfect day, that me swimming across the ocean, that moment.
It had a lot more depth to that.
I was suffering greatly on the inside. So that moment in the midst of suffering, I think it's why I look back and say, that was one of the best days of my life. So I've got a little bit of a cat update because, to my surprise, many of you still ask me about the cats all the time. And
we have a lot of animal lovers.
Well, I find out sometimes we have more podcast listeners than I realize because people come up and ask me about the cats. Oh my. And I realized we haven't had a cat update in a while, and I thought I'd give a cat update.
You know, we had a new life the other day, and someone said, where are your cats?
I know. And that's when I found out you must listen to the podcast. So, I don't remember what the last update was, but you know, out of the six cats, only four are with us anymore. Don't know.
Two little fluff balls.
Actually, there was more than six because there was three, and two because there's three litters now. Thankfully, we haven't had new litters for a while.
But we're down to four.
So we're down to four. The other cats, one's back at the animal shelter. The two little fluff and fur ball, they disappeared months ago. Don't know what happened to them. And they were awfully cute. But
really cute. I think someone snatched them up. Maybe a listener did.
I don't know. But these two little fluff and fur ball, they were all black cats with white stripes right down their face. They were cute. I've got pictures when they were little. So we're down to four. So we've got Nippy and Spot. They're like the OG. They were the first, and they spend the most time around our house. And then you've got White Sox, for all the right reasons, why we call them White Sox. And then we've got Molecule.
Yeah.
So those are the four that hang around. So, I would say in the last couple of months, as I'd go out there in the morning to feed the cat. So obviously, Nippy and Spot are always out there every morning. They sit at my back door. They look inside the house. And yes, it's still creepy when I walk by and I see them there.
And they take a cat nap.
They're
right by the door.
They hang out there a lot. So I've noticed something over the last couple months. When I walk out there, they stand right under my feet now. They used to just run away. So I'd open the door. They'd all scatter. I'd put the food out. And then they would cautiously come back. Not anymore. They don't run away. And I'm not a cat person, and I had to research this, and I had to ask cat people what this was all about. So I walked out there, and they just are under my feet to the point where I've almost tripped on them. I'm afraid I'm going to step on them. And I go out there, and they rub me. They rub up against me, okay? This is all kind of new. And so they walk in between my legs.
About to trip on them when that
I've
happens.
Almost they've yeah. almost tripped me and I've fallen out there. Yeah. They're right under my feet and I'm like, get away. And so they rub up against me, which is, I'll be honest with you, it's kind of weird because they're outdoor cats and they're kind of like, I look at them like don't touch me. There is a little bit of that. So, and then right about the same time that they were not afraid at all anymore, I can reach down and just pet them. Like, they're fine with it. It's like no big deal. They also eat out of my hand now. So we have these little, what are they called, Kirsten?
The little cat sticks.
The cat sticks that my mom gave them to me. They're like
cat sticks.
Anyway, I'll sit down on my deck and Nippy and Spot will walk right up to me.
Well,
and
maybe they're called flavor sticks.
They're just like, they're like cat push-up pops. And they just, and they sit there. And so I had to go to the internet and look up, what does it mean when a cat rubs up against you? And I asked my mom about this, because she's the cat whisperer and all that stuff. Come to find out, when a cat does that, that behavior is all positive. It means they trust you. It means they've adopted you. You are a trusted person in their life. I'm part of the tribe, baby. I'm adopted into the cat family.
I'm a special cat.
It means they have adopted me.
I'm proud to be a member.
That's my cat update. I've been adopted into the gang. And it also means that they're routine and they know that
They know
I'm associated with their food, and that's
you're their provider.
I'm their provider, and it just made me feel all warm and fuzzy inside. I've been adopted into their family. They rub up against me every time I walk out there now.
Well, there you go.
So that's the cat update. So I guess from all the other cat owners, do your cats do this? I'm sure they do. That's the ultimate sign of trust. My mom said that they're rubbing their scent on you, and that kind of creeps me out. But evidently, that's what cats do. I didn't grow up with cats, y'all. This is all brand new stuff for me.
So they're like claiming you when they put their scent on you. They're claiming you as their owner so that if another cat were to go up, they'd be like, that must be someone else's owner, not mine.
Well, I asked AI, what does it mean when an outdoor cat comes up and rubs up against you? And ChatGPT said something like, oh, this is all good news, Joe, or something like that. It's like, you know, AI is always really positive. That is a wonderful insight. Oh, that is it's always affirming language. Like, oh, this is a wonderful event in your life or something like that. Oh, that means that the cat trusts you and that it's in a routine and that they see you as the provider. Anytime a cat will rub up against you, it's a positive thing. So there you go. So, world, you're welcome. You've been given the latest on the cat update.
That's all for today's show. We want to thank our amazing producer, Abby O'Brien. Be sure to check out our show notes and the links for things that we talked about today. And don't forget to subscribe. Thanks for joining us on
Under the Hood, not a car show. Let's do this thing. Bum, 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 bum. I finished the Hope in a Series Future on Sunday. All done.
Nope. Hope in a Series Future.
I said Hope in a Future Series. Did I say Hope in a Series?
Hope in a Series okay. Future.
Start, scratch.
She's going to stop.
I don't stop. For you.
All right.